The Wild West Was Not Ours. Chapter 1. Where the Desert Don't End. Call me Cal. Cal is short for Caleb. Caleb Turner, if you want the whole thing. I like my name. Same way I like fried rabbit, without any buckshot. Got me a taste for it now, and a big juicy peach, too. Wash it down with a glass of cider, or I'd drink water from a cactus if I had to. There's cactuses all over out here. Tall ones. Tumbleweeds roll past in the wind, and the road's just dirt as far as you can see. It's hot in the Arizona desert, so hot I can feel it coming up through the bottoms of my boots. There's a saloon nearby with a porch step that creaks when my boot hits it just right. The wood peels like skin off a rabbit. Inside, a beat-up piano sits in the corner. It makes a lively sound, slightly off-key, but no one seems to mind. The sheriff left town. No one seemed to mind that either. I have blue eyes and sandy blonde hair. My hat flattens my hair at the top of my head. I'm trying to grow it out just a bit. Ma says I best be careful with that twinkle in my eye. It's my boyish looks that are enough to get the girls smiling pretty. A train comes hootin' and hollering down the tracks, across from a sign that reads Wagon Camp. I'm standin' out in the open. I got my hands at my sides. One of 'em holds a rope, like I'm some kind of cattle rancher. The other looks like it's fixin' to sling a pearl-handled pistol. But I never touched a gun before. I'm only 9 years old. Ma says in this house you got to be at least 11 before you can hold one in your hand. 12 before you can shoot at a rabbit. The brim of my hat dipped low. I eased it up, just enough to see clouds parting in the sky. The year was 1875, though I didn't know that then. I only knew that the West was wild, and men with names like Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday walked the streets of dusty towns. Folks say Earp was a lawman who shot 3 outlaws, and Holliday was a gunfighter from right here in Arizona. There's an old saying, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. I squinted. The sun was a flurry of soft pink and a brighter, almost fiery orange. Carefully, it inched its way behind the shadow of a cactus. The stillness of the air reminded me of when I was 5. Pa couldn't see me out of the corner of his eye. He figured I must be up to something. Sometimes quiet can be misleading. You think nothing's going wrong until it's staring you straight in the face, so close you can't escape it if you tried. By now the train's just a faint whistle. The clanging of steel against the endless track sounds like church bells. I can barely make out the train's clunky black frame round in the bend, as if never to be seen again. Chapter 2. The Willie Boys. Flies swarmed in the heat. Horse flies, big enough that I imagined trapping one in my bare hands and feeling it struggle and flop inside the tiny cave of flesh before it finally went still, its wings fallen to its sides. There was a train depot not far off, and down south sat Rufus Grizzly's general store. The Willie Boys. John was 9, and his 2 red-headed brothers were 10. Always looked like they were casing the joint, like they were fixin' to put Mr. Grizzly out of business, stealin' his precious licorice sticks, honey cakes, and molasses apples. Something about those boys didn't feel right, not one bit. From their snarky looks to John's nose, which turned up like a pig snout. He had dark freckles and rosy cheeks. His laugh was somewhere between a wolf's lone cry and the nagging, jabbering of a hyena. It was all I could do to avoid looking him in the eye. I could hear Ma's voice echo in my ears. Surround yourself with good people, Cal. I couldn't help but wonder, even with the sheriff gone, If nobody stops you from getting into mischief, is it still wrong? A fly buzzed past the brim of my hat. I nicknamed him Frederick. The humming softened as he circled around the back of my head. It grew louder as he reached the other side of my face. Instead of trapping the insect in my bare hands, I gave it a quick swat with the back of my hand, just enough to knock it off course. My face was hot to the touch, almost like when you're running a fever, but I didn't have a fever. I'm just a boy standing in the middle of the desert as the sun shines like it's melting the skin off my hands. I took my hat off and fanned the air with it, searching for a breeze. Something. Anything. Hot wind was better than no wind at all. I took a deep breath. I headed toward Mr. Grizzly's store. I could see John Willie outside with his back against the wall. His ankles were crossed. He had spurs on his cowboy boots and a stick of gum hanging out the corner of his mouth like a cigarette. His two red-headed brothers hovered near him like sidekicks. I walked on by and slipped through the front door, avoiding eye contact as best I could. I looked up. Mr. Grizzly smiled from behind the front counter. "Well, if it ain't Cal Turner," he said excitedly. I nodded. "Yes, sir." "What can I do for you?" I thought for a moment. Somehow I had forgotten what I came here for. "Think, Cal, think," I whispered to myself. But before I could get in another word, Mr. Grizzly slapped a couple licorice sticks on the counter. I licked my lips. I reached into my pocket and slid a penny his way. Mr. Grizzly peered warily out the window, ignoring the coin in front of him. "Careful now," he warned. "John Willie and his brothers are up to something. I can feel it in my bones." He rubbed his aching back. Once again, I nodded. "Yes, sir," I repeated. Outside, John Willie flicked a tiny pebble my way. It bounced off the side of my jeans. I lifted my head. I cracked one eye open. He spit on the dirt, rubbing the toe of his boot in. "Not now, John," I muttered, shaking my head. "What's the matter? Are you scared?" I cleared my throat. "I said not now." I gritted my teeth. I wanted to add more, but a tiny voice inside me pushed back. Gently, hesitantly. Instead, I turned and walked away. Chapter 3. There's a snake in my boot. You ever hear a rattlesnake hiss? The kind that makes you wonder if you left your boots out all night and it might have crawled in the toe of one of them, just waiting for you when you wake up at the crack of dawn? I closed my eyes and thought back. Pa once told me a bedtime story about old man Jenkins. Tried to wrangle a rattlesnake like it was cattle. Never did hear what happened to him. I'd ask and Pa would smile, pat me on the head and say, "Sleep tight," before pulling the covers up snug around my neck. I hesitated before putting on my boots. I picked one up and gave it a shake. I wasn't sure I wanted to know what was inside. Sand fell out, enough to make a tiny pyramid on the floor beneath my feet. I breathed a sigh of relief. Then the other. Same thing, a clump of sand. It felt gritty when my toes touched it. At first, they tested the sand like they were stepping on molten lava. The fear of a snake in my boot hadn't left me yet. The settlement stretched out just beyond the train depot. Most mornings, I stepped off the porch of our small wooden shack. It had two rooms and a water barrel outside that sat on a big rock. I had to climb a wooden ladder to get to it. The handrail was rough, like it might drive a splinter clear under my nail. Looked like something had been at it, like a cat claw in it or a raccoon chewing it down to dust. I almost forgot to mention, I have an 8-year-old sister named Sarah. Sarah Jane Turner, if you want the whole thing. She's got blue eyes like me, too, with a little bit of green in 'em. She's sweet like honey cakes. So sweet I couldn't imagine anyone ever hurting her. "What you got there?" I asked. "A penny," she replied, stroking it between her thumb and forefinger as if it were a magic lamp. "Oh, yeah? Not just any penny, a lucky penny." She stood there grinning from ear to ear. I cocked my head to one side, not saying a word. "What makes a penny lucky?" I finally asked. "It's special, 'cause it ain't like the others. See?" She waved it in front of me. From the outside, it looked like an ordinary coin, but I played along. "It sure does look special, doesn't it?" She nodded. Her self-assured smile said 1,000 words. For a second, she closed her eyes, proudly displaying her lucky penny for the world to see. There was a pause, just long enough for the stillness in the room to settle. She blinked, casually, her shoulders dropping with ease. "That's what makes it lucky." She tapped the surface with her finger. She rolled her eyes. "Anyone would know, silly." I shrugged my shoulders. I stood corrected by someone a whole head shorter than me. I remembered what she said. I couldn't argue with that. Chapter 4. Not with a Gun. I had a lot weighing on my mind. How do you keep someone safe without guns or violence? More importantly, I wondered, how do you keep someone safe without getting hurt yourself? I didn't have the answer, and maybe that was okay. Here's what I did have. I had a slingshot made from leather strips. I packed dried clay into little pellets and shot at shrubs in the desert. I'd watch the branches bend back as the clay smacked them. Soon enough, they'd spring back to life. David Howardson and I were best friends. We'd meet up where the sun had baked the dirt into a cracked patch. It resembled the outline of a sparrow's wing. I had a pair of jeans on, stiff like a board 'cause they were new. I felt the fabric rubbing against my thighs as crickets worked their wings together close by. I couldn't place it, but I could hear it, a familiar high pitch, even in daylight. David looked up. By now, a single shrub was expanding like Ma's belly when she carried my sister Sarah. It was plump with clay pellets, looked more like a clay statue than it did a bush burning in the desert heat. "I know," he said, his eyes bulging as though he had just hatched an idea. "Let's shoot clay pellets at Curly's wagon camp." It was an abandoned lot about as muddy as clay pellets themselves. A dozen wagons with their overhead tarps nearly torn to shreds from the Arizona wind were parked just as stubborn as a mule in the dirt. I smiled. Big. My jaw ached from showing teeth like I was some kind of wild animal. But I didn't want to hurt nobody, just thought David had come up with the best idea yet. I felt my jeans loosen with the excitement of finding something else to sling hand-packed clay at. I could hear the sound of wheels squawking like birds high in the sky. Except these wheels didn't move. Not anymore. Hadn't moved since 1850. A good 15 years or so, I guess. Least that's what Pa told me. But even slinging clay, harmless, hand-packed clay, reminded me of the pebble John Willie had kicked my way, the one that bounced off my jeans and trickled down the dirt path just outside Rufus Grizzly's general store. Suppose he had kicked one Sarah's way. Then what? Would I know how to keep her safe? Protect her without guns or violence? I remembered Sarah's lucky penny. Bet John Willie would go after that if he could. Not because he needed it. Not because it would help him afford a loaf of bread or some milk. Nah, he'd do it just to be mean. He was like that. Chapter 5. The Sting Before It Strikes. He had the pinchers of a scorpion, an Arizona bark scorpion, loitering behind desert marigolds, just waiting to sting you if you stepped on it. He was no scorpion. Instead, he stood 4 feet 8 inches tall, loitering behind the back of Mr. Grizzly's store, about to filch what wasn't his. John Jacob Willie must have popped out of his ma's belly with a scowl on his face. He was a spitfire, that boy, a year younger than his twin brothers, but the leader of that pack. "It's the three muskrats," folks would say, like it was all a joke. But if you asked me, they weren't no muskrats, more like a pack of wolves. Hungry wolves. John's brothers were skinny, 80-pound beanpole toadies hanging at his hip, begging him for scraps of candy. On the rare occasion a couple of jelly candies, bright sugary beans, were tossed their way, they scarfed 'em down, as if there was no telling when the next meal would come. I scoured the desert landscape with my eyes. I was looking for signs of impending doom. I squinted. My eyelids tightened, forming tiny creases that only I could feel. Sarah approached Rufus Grizzly's general store, still stroking her lucky penny between her thumb and forefinger, humming a tune, though I couldn't make out what it was. She flipped the coin over in the palm of her hand, revealing the face of a Native American. Perhaps that's why she called it lucky? Who was I to judge what made it special? All I knew was, anyone who came after Sarah, or that penny, would have to come from me first. I was standing at the intersection of determination and fear. I whispered something to myself. What if John Willie came after me for coming after him for coming after Sarah? It was a tongue twister for sure. I found myself tangled in my own thoughts. It was as if I already knew what he was plotting to do before the deed had been done. The tune stopped. Sarah stood there. The door to Mr. Grizzly's store felt farther away the longer she stared. I gave her a nudge with my right hip. She took 2 steps forward. For a second I wished the door would swing open. I'd see Mrs. Grizzly holding a platter of freshly baked cookies. Before John Willie or his brothers could get one, she'd slap his bare hands with a ruler. Same way they do in school if you misbehave. There was no schoolhouse in sight, nor was there a schoolteacher to enforce the golden rule, treat others as you would like to be treated. Sometimes I wonder, what good is authority if a person don't listen anyway? I sighed. The wind sighed. Together we sighed.
Hey, hey, hey!
Chapter 6. Penny in Her Pocket. "Hey, that's mine!" Sarah shouted as John Willie pulled the penny from her pocket. He began playing hot potato with it, tossing it to his brothers. They flipped it between them like a game of tiddlywinks. To them it was an ordinary penny. To Sarah it was lucky. I watched the penny swirling in the air. Somehow it had lost its luster. The Willie boys had their hands on it now. Sarah rubbed a tear from the corner of her eye. I thought for a moment. The Wild West was not ours, not to take, not to claim, and not to steal from. "I'm telling my pa," she bellowed, her small frame turning as she ran toward the settlement. I looked around. Sarah was gone. Just me, John Willie, and his brothers. I couldn't just stand there. I had to say something, anything, but what? It wasn't that I didn't know what to say. Truth was, I had plenty to say, but getting John Willie to actually listen, that was like finding a needle in a haystack. "You know, you could try picking on someone your own size for once," I said. John put his hands on his hips. "Mr. Big Mouth got me good." "It ain't yours, John. You know that. You gonna do something about it?" Then he leaned over, slapping the penny in my hand. "Here's your sister's dopey penny." He turned his head, motioning with one arm. Come on, gang. I stood there, catching my breath, watching the Willy boys skip merrily off as though nothing had happened. I brushed the surface of the penny. Dirt and sand fell to the ground beneath my feet. The breeze blew a leaf onto the crown of my hat. I removed the wide brim, shaking my blonde locks, my head bowing at the gravel road. Strands of yellow tugged effortlessly at my eyelashes. Long, dark eyelashes against my ocean eyes. Chapter 7. Safe at last.
You mean you asked for it and they gave it back? Just like that? Sarah wanted to know.
Her lucky penny was safe at last.
Well, not exactly like that, I said, grinning from ear to ear.
Ma smiled, wiping dishes with a clean rag. She patted her apron dry. Bubbles from the soapy water popped against the fabric. I thought back. Something about John Willie slapping that coin in the palm of my hand seemed too easy. Almost like he was plotting to do an eviler deed.
Can't say what's eviler than stealing from an innocent 8-year-old girl, though. Leave it to John Willie. If there was a will, there was a way. Only good thing I can say about that boy. He was determined as can be, even if it weren't for no good reason. He had spunk. Moxie. He didn't give up and didn't give in. Wish I had that kind of confidence. Except if I did, I'd use it for good. Make the world a better place. Keep at it till everyone chose right over wrong. I looked out the window. No sight of him or his twin brothers. Part of me wished I had seen him when I looked out that window. Could have resolved unfinished business. The way I seen it, he just walked off and left me as if I was hanging on the edge of a cliff. Never did get through to him. What was I supposed to think? The first thing to pop out of my mouth would suddenly warm that cold heart of his? I imagined his heart as a block of steel. Slowly, I'd chip away at it until it crumbled apart. Then what? It'd be nothing but a pile of rubble, with sharp, jagged corners. Sharp things gave me the heebie-jeebies. I shuddered. Once again, I looked out the window. Still nothing. I closed my eyes and counted to 60. I blinked. My eyes peered through the glass pane. It had become an obsession. Would the Willy boys suddenly appear? Was I subconsciously calling in their presence the more I checked the window? The window stained with cobwebs and black widow spiders that hid in the corner, pretending to be invisible even though I could still make out the shape of their bodies? The penny. The lucky penny. My little sister's lucky penny. My little sister Sarah's lucky penny was safe at last. Why didn't I feel safe at last?
Chapter 8. A Sticky Situation. I've been thinking a lot lately about how just 'cause something exists don't mean it's mine to take. Could be anything. Land, money, or candy from Rufus Grizzly's general store. Take land, for instance. Folks came out west and claimed it as their own, but it didn't start that way. It already belonged to someone, same as Sarah's penny. I looked up. The sky was hazy, a grayish blue with clouds that looked like cotton candy. The clouds shifted to one side until I could barely make out what shape they were. Almost like someone was stealing the clouds. Stealing. The word landed hard when I said it out loud. It was one of them dirty words Ma said Sarah and I was never to use, or else we'd get a whoopin'. Big whoopin'. Whoopin' so hard it made your eyes water just thinking about it. Using the word was one thing. Actually committing the crime was something else. First, they're stealing a penny. Then, Ma says some folks rob entire stores. Another way of putting it is looting.
I don't like that word neither. Bet I'd get a whoopin' twice as big if Ma heard that word in our home. Ma says she don't need to discipline us like some kids, 'cause Sarah and I already know right from wrong. The way she raised us, we learned about manners. You know, how to say please and thank you, and yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. First time I had a sleepover at David Howardson's, Ma pulled me aside for a little talkin' to. "Mind your manners," she said. Ma knew about them Willie boys, told Sarah and I to stay clear of 'em. There's an old saying about how birds of a feather flock together. It means that if you hang around someone long enough, you'll become just like them, good or bad. There was a knock at the front door. David Howardson stood outside, waving his slingshot through the peephole. Ma answered. "Hello, David." "Hi, Mrs. Turner. Is Cal home?" I breathed a sigh of relief. No John Willie in sight. Ma returned to the kitchen. David faced me. I knew what he was thinking before he even said it out loud. "Curly's Wagon Camp!" we shouted simultaneously. Ma looked over her shoulder. "Shh," she said, putting her finger to her lips. "Sarah is sleeping." It was the following morning. Sarah had come down with the sniffles. Ma shooed David and I outside to play. It was the kind of day that sometimes leads to mischief. I could feel trouble drifting in like hot, dry, desert wind. Tyler James Hilton, an old Western songwriter, once sang, "First you play along, even though it's wrong, but then it starts feeling right." I didn't want trouble to ever feel right. Somehow that was easier said than done. I rolled my shoulders back. I shook one leg, releasing a wrinkle from my stiff jeans. "Be back in time for supper," I called to Ma as David and I headed out.
Hey.
Chapter 9. Just One Bite. "Hey, kid," I heard a voice call out, even though it knew darn well my name was Cal. It was John Willie. "I'll catch up with you in a second," I said to David. I turned abruptly in John's direction. David nodded, trotting off toward Curly's Wagon Camp, his rubber slingshot in hand. At first, there was relief. It was David who had knocked on the front door as Ma, Sarah, and I relaxed at home. But now, it felt like I hadn't gone more than 10 steps from home, and trouble was waiting for me, asking me to join in on whatever fun it had planned. "Not now, John," I heard myself say. I said that before. This time, I was neither frustrated nor fed up. I was a deflated balloon. In the same way Sarah's stolen penny had lost its luster, I, too, had lost my luster. My legs were shaky. I stood there watching as he walked circles around me, scanning me from head to toe, sizing me up. "Well, well, well," he said. His finger touched the tip of my nose. He flicked it upward like he was flicking a piece of dried bark. I swallowed. I wanted to shoot clay pellets at abandoned wagons inside Curly's Wagon Camp, the place that felt like a ghost town, the place where David and I could just be boys. John put his arm around my shoulder. He pulled me in close. It was a different kind of closeness. It was a closeness I didn't trust. I looked out the corner of my eye, my head facing straight. Same way a dog looks out the corner of its eye, standing still as a statue, thinking it's about to get bit by a snake or something. "You know, kid, you got guts," he said. I was going over every word in my head, wondering when he'd stop calling me kid, or if he ever would. Perhaps in his eyes, I didn't deserve to be called by my real name. What was so offensive about Cal? I wondered. It was a nice name. With his arm still dangling over my shoulder, he began walking. Looked like we were tied at the hips, handcuffed by the sheriff. You know, the one who left town. I felt my feet moving alongside him. I hadn't told them to move. They just moved. Simple as that, as if they had no choice but to move. Part of me was curious as to where he was taking us. Had I been there before? There's an old saying, curiosity killed the cat. I was sure glad I wasn't a cat. You hungry? John asked, looking as sly as an amber-colored fox. I looked up. There were four of us now. Scut Willie opened the front door. His lips were stained with honey. It dripped onto his shirt. The Grizzlies left town, too, he said, winking. Sam Willie nodded. Help yourself, he replied, licking sugar from his lips. You know you want to. Rufus Grizzly's general store was the last thing to lose its luster. Chapter 10. The Luster Returns. Have you ever been so hungry you ate the first thing you could get your hands on? It don't even taste good because it ain't what you want. Not if you know it ain't right. Some folks talk about looking at the horizon, how it stretches on for miles. I'm standing here inside Mr. Grizzly's store, staring at jars and jars of candy, barrels even, like they stretch on for miles too. Only thing is, I ain't moving, like a deer caught in the headlights. John Willie smiled, just as innocent as a clown at the fair, as if clowns really were innocent. Truth is, they were terrifying. Couldn't look one in the eye without getting the shakes. Shakes so bad they'd have Ma with her hand on my forehead, wondering if I'd come down with scarlet fever. Well, what are you waiting for? He sneered. I didn't have an answer. Didn't know what I was waiting for. Just knew I had this awful feeling in the pit of my stomach. Something didn't sit right. I looked up. Sam and Scut got their tongues all over molasses apples, licking them like they were kissing girls. I'm only 9 years old. Still thought girls had cooties. I'd rather sling a clay pellet at a beat-up wagon, its canvas tarp torn apart by the Arizona winds. Couldn't help but think, David must be wondering if I got lost. Would he come looking for me? What would he say if he saw me? That I was just as guilty as them Willie boys, on account of being with them? I stepped closer to the candy, breathing thick, heavy, exhausted breaths, the kind you breathe when you're afraid a scorpion's gonna sting you or a rattlesnake might bite your toe clear off. John Willie paused. Licorice don't bite, he said, waving a strand in my face like a snake. Maybe not, I thought, but the smell of danger was just as sharp as reptile fangs. The dark licorice root was almost as intense as the Arizona heat. I remembered that time I walked into Mr. Grizzly's store. He slapped a couple licorice sticks on the counter as I slid a shiny coin his way. Didn't have nothing against licorice then. Liked it just fine, same way I like fried rabbit without the buckshot. But not today. Today I'm looking at licorice like it's some kind of monster, a lanky one with a spiky, twisted trunk. I pretended it was a Joshua tree from the Mojave Desert, adapted to the extreme heat and arid conditions of the Arizona landscape. Here, inside Mr. Grizzly's store, I hadn't adapted to John Willie's moral compass, or lack thereof. Spit was stuck in my throat. I wanted to tell John Willie what I really thought of him, that he was a rotten, no-good-for-nothing human being. Stealing was wrong. I liked Mr. Grizzly, and I didn't want to hurt him. How I see it, there's two ways you can hurt a person, physically or emotionally. Stealing would hurt Mr. Grizzly emotionally. My arm is the last thing to stretch on like the horizon. My blue eyes can see it in front of me. It don't want to do no harm, just want to block the opening to one of them jars, stop John Willie's grubby, dirt-stained fingers from digging a hole further down into the center of the glass cylinder. I felt a hangnail with my left hand. My cuticles are sticking out like layers of dead skin. Stop! I heard myself say, as if I ain't even in my own body. Just hear this sound like wagon wheels screeching to a halt or screaming against the road as they plow through piles of hot, steamy rubble. John Willie chuckled. Not an ounce of fat on that boy, and still, his belly's shaking like he's St. Nicholas. Can't think about St. Nicholas right now, though. I got a robbery on my hands. Stop! I yelled again, like I don't know if he heard me the first time. Yeah, I heard you, he said. Well?
Well, what?
You gonna put that back? I asked, referring to the honey cake in his hand.
Why should I?
'Cause you know it ain't right. That's why.
Look around. I don't see nobody watching. That is, unless you got eyes in the back of your head.
I sighed. It don't mean it's right, I said. John Willie rolled his eyes, as if he were waiting for the preacher to stop preaching.
Yeah, yeah, get on with it, kid, he said.
I smiled. Just 'cause you can don't mean you should. He let out a long, exasperated breath, so long it felt like eternity. He tossed the honey cake into one of the barrels. If you look long enough into someone's eyes, deep into their eyes, it says a lot about who they are. Something about John Willie's eyes told me he felt just like I did. Didn't want to eat that cake either.
Come on, gang, let's get out of here.
The spurs on his cowboy boots reflected sunlight as he swung open the door to Mr. Grizzly's store, preserving the last remains of his bruised ego. He wore a gray and white bandana and a charcoal vest with tan shirt underneath. By the time the sheriff rode back into town, everything had already been set straight. The Grizzlies arrived just in time to see Lester return to the general store. Something inside me settled that day. I looked at them jars, still full, still shiny enough you could almost see your reflection through them. I licked my lips, not 'cause I was hungry. They were dry, chapped, cracked like the mud that had hardened around the desert barrel cactus and bright orange marigolds outside. Didn't have that awful feeling in the pit of my stomach. I watched as clouds parted in the sky. The air was fresh and clear. I heard curve-billed thrashers and gambles quail high up, singing a song of freedom. And this time, I feel it, deep in my chest, like I ain't never felt it before. Feels so good, I don't want to stop thinking about it.